Craig. I hope you do your job right tonight. Been failing us week after week.
You probably won't because we still haven't upgraded the server. I mean his instruments.
I'm gonna go ahead and apologize to anyone who listens to this ahead of time, because I'm sure Craig's gonna shit the bed again. Just saying.
Well, I mean, it's not his fault.
I blame Craig.
They have reported that the instruments that he records through have been overloaded, and that's what's causing the problem.
Yep. Everybody's at home, so everybody's on Discord. I think it's probably just because we're recording these so late on Sunday nights.
You think that there would be nobody around so late on Sunday nights?
Yeah, apparently everybody's around on Sunday nights, so we need to record these a different day. Or, you know, figure something else out. But,
Sunday nights.
That's not happening. Hi, guys. Welcome to the Grumpy Dungeon Masters, plus Craig, the failure. I'm Jay. The other guy is Chris. Say hi, Chris.
Hello.
So what are we talking about tonight?
I don't know. You're the one who said we had to get in here and do something, so I'm in here doing something. Going off of our podcast like 2 weeks ago, I think, where DMs have had to wing it, I have a little story.
Ooh, story time.
Unfortunately, it will be Icewind Dale spoilers. I will keep it. I'll keep it as vague as possible. So if you are going to play Icewind Dale, you won't know. But what my players did specifically is on them. So
we'll try to do this as vaguely as possible. But be warned.
Skip ahead 10 minutes and we'll be done. So the spoiler part is this. My group was sent up to a cabin to rescue Macreedus, which is a great
name. That's not even vague. not even trying to hide names here.
Right. And he's working on an artifact that could help him control weather. And the group set up there because they want them to recover it, because they want to see if they can fix the problems that the Frost Maiden is causing. Well, my group, through some shenanigans, starts working on this device, and they're doing everything appropriately to add the extra thing needed to the device to make it work properly. And my Goliath fighter, who has the secret of being born under the sign of the Frost Maiden and thus is blessed with natural cold weather resistance, has pretty much aligned himself with the Frost Maiden's goals. So he is a Rune Knight fighter, and he just bluntly asked me, he said, "Hey, since this thing has runes all over it, I'm copying the runes, can I change the rune that looks like the Morning Lord to the Frost Maiden rune?" And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I don't see why you couldn't. So he goes off and does that. And instead of the device going off and causing summer to happen for 8 hours, he instead causes a unnatural blizzard that covers all of 10 towns.
More winter.
Yeah. And since even possible. And in the book, when you complete the device, the Frost Maiden gets mad at them and sends a hit party after them. Well, I did the opposite, since he basically made a blizzard even more. I had her show up and give him a magic weapon. So,
of which I have yet to come across any magic weapons in all of Icewind Dale. There are
none.
Yeah.
So that just goes back to our session we had a while ago, where it's talking about DMs have to be able to think on their feet and improv. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I could have told the player, no, you can't do that because it's not in the book. And that would have just been very dull, because everything that character has aligns perfectly with.
If a DM does that, they're not wrong for doing it. Like, it is the Dungeon Master's prerogative to say that it isn't possible. You know, maybe they don't know the proper runes to do that. They might need a true name. Like, there's a lot of valid ways to say no. But it definitely makes the story more interesting if you're just able to. All right, go for it.
You don't have to do to the extent that I did it, but you need to throw something out there because it doesn't. It wouldn't make sense if I was the player sitting there going, "Okay, I am a guy who is built off of runic magic, doing runic stuff, and runes are my life, baby."
Well, the caveat I would have added to that, because it does require arcana checks.
Yes, dexterity arcana checks.
I'm aware it was dexterity arcana, which was weird. I've never seen that. But at the same time, it's arcana checks. So you could have easily put in the caveat, if he's not proficient in arcana, he still doesn't have the knowledge to make it work.
No, I swapped that up even further, because if they're wanting someone to do a dexterity arcana check with a guy who is a fighter, who is a runic knight, I made him do strength arcana checks. And he was kind of puzzled by that at first, but he's an experienced player. So
My players were very puzzled when I said dexterity arcana.
So, I mean, the logic behind that is, like, you're carving tiny runes into the device that are magical in nature. Oh,
yeah.
But that's not, this character is built on just carving runes through his strength of will. So, you know, it just made strength. It made sense to change it from dexterity to strength. And he did that. You know, I threw him a bone, gave him a magic weapon for that. And then my entire group pledged allegiance to the Frost Maiden, except for my wife, who had to roll up a new character.
It happens. It happens. All
That's
right.
Our third now.
We need to move past the spoiler section here.
So past the spoilers, you really need to find something. Even if you don't go to the extent that I did, you need to find something. Even if it's just like the encounter that happens afterwards doesn't happen, at least that would be a thing. You still give them full experience. Something positive has to come from creative. And I know inspiration is kind of the mechanic that 5th edition has, but I've never handed out inspiration in any of my games because it just feels so weak.
I hand out inspiration, but I only hand it out for good role-playing usually. Occasionally I will hand out one if a fucking player just gets one over on me, but but it's got to be something. It either has to crack me up laughing, or it has to be good role playing. Like, that's generally the only times I hand it out, because it's such a small thing. You know, it's a single reroll basically, and it's gone after that. So, like, inspiration, you can easily hand that shit out. But for really and truly altering something like what you were just discussing, for really, really getting into things, possibly changing entire campaigns and so forth. For that, handing out items, handing out boons, handing out other things, giving them special role play moments specifically for their characters because of what they did.
Yeah.
Those are more of the benefits that you would want to get or give as a dungeon master in those scenarios, rather than just, you get inspiration.
Well, yeah. So I had the Frost Maiden show up, and when
spoilers hashtag spoilers.
Well, no, this is outside of the book. This is something I did.
Yes,
it was my choice of having it happen. So I had her show up, and that's the role play that they got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was just dumbfounded. You could watch the stream of it and just see her jaw drop. She's like, no way.
Because they went outside the scope of what was expected, and they got something for it. So
overall, everything kind of went really well, and I think they were rewarded properly. I switched the blessing to a Frost Maiden blessing instead, and I empowered the blessing that Goliath got. And overall, I think it was fair. It wasn't over the top. It wasn't crazy.
No, it's definitely going to alter your campaign going forward, but we'll have to see how that plays out.
Well, that's pretty much happened already. Like, I don't think there was a way we were gonna move past the fact that they were doing things like that.
I mean, so, look, we've recently discussed this on the podcast. Our players have shifted. Your players are your players' characters. Let me say this straight: are a bunch of shit. They're a bunch of shit bags. Yeah, they are. Whereas my players, for the first time ever, are not.
I think it's unfair to them how they're playing the PCs. A lot of them are just.
They're neutral. They are neutral, and they are along for the ride. They're not trying to cause chaos, but you got one or two that are, and everybody else just flowing with it. That's typically what happens in those types of groups.
Right. So they're shitbags. They're not going out of their way to be shitbags. It's just
every opportunity pops up, though, they're making the intentional wrong choice.
Well, I mean.
Wrong is probably the incorrect word, but they're making the choice that's worst for the NPCs that are not part of their it's bad for 10 towns generally.
Yeah, their choices are definitely bad for 10 towns. They just covered all 10 towns in 7 feet of snow. So it's, you know, they are definitely. Profile. They're definitely pro Frostbane at this point in time, but that's not a bad thing. So, like, even on the Rime of the Frostbane forums on Reddit, some guy posed a question up there. It's like, hey, I have a player that wants to be, you know, a druid of Ariel. I'm like, how do I do that? Because Ariel is accepted to be the bad guy, but she's not really the bad guy. She has her motives. You have to kind of figure those out. Yeah. She is not an evil deity.
That's actually not true. She is an evil deity.
I was positive that.
Nope. Her alignment is evil. Speaking of evil, and we'll get to this later, but I had a thing that we're going to discuss
She's neutral evil.
Right.
Okay, she's not a chaotic evil deity. She doesn't go around.
She's just sort of out for herself, you know. It's
right.
Yeah, she's not intentionally spreading chaos or anything. She's just making. She's doing what she does.
Right, but she's also winter, and winter always has that death and decay side to it, and that's the perspective you as a DM need to come from with. You know, that she's not going out of her way to murder all 10 towns. It's survival of the fittest, so to speak, which is an evil kind of aligned mental area.
But I've played with so many groups over the years, and as it is, when you have, I call them the evil parties, generally half of the people in the party are neutral or some variant thereof. They're just sort of middle of the road. You might have only one player, one character that's actually evil. You might have one character that's chaotic neutral, but the evil character and the chaotic neutral character tend to just cause so much chaos and everybody else just rides along.
Yeah, but I will say that what's unique about my group in this particular thing is that they're not playing the PCs wrong. They're doing a really good job of playing them the right way. Like
they're playing them right, and everybody is having fun, and really that's kind of what matters. It's when you start breaking down the whole campaign and players stop having fun that it becomes the problem.
They're not the murder hobo group.
Yeah,
they're not doing that. They're not being that terrible.
They're being good players. Yeah, they're being good players. They're just playing terrible characters.
Well, yeah, they're doing it fantastically. Like they actually had a bit like a discussion of like, you know, they're all their PCs backstories in the situation, and there was, you know, another almost PvP session because of it. But that was just because of how good that they're doing, which is something that was very interesting in how my game kind of got around to becoming what it was. So, I be more spoilers for Frost Maiden. Oh well, I don't care.
Yeah, I care. Let's not do more spoilers. We can.
But
we can
I want. It's hard because it's like they're doing such a fantastic job with the cards that they are dealt. Like I wouldn't want to have done this with any other group in any other way because it just wouldn't have worked out. And now they're just, it's fantastic and everything is going perfectly. And it hasn't derailed the campaign at all. It hasn't even changed anything. Like the story is still going to be exactly what it was before.
It would be hard. It would be hard to derail this campaign.
More than the book already does it to itself.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the book tries to fucking derail itself, but truthfully, I think it'd be really difficult. I think the only way to derail it would be if the characters just decided to somehow leave Icewind Dale.
Yeah, we're got peace.
Yeah, either that or they could just be those assholes who are like, no, I'm just going to stay in the inn. I don't care what's going on out in the world. But I know we've talked about those kind of players before who just don't actually want to participate. But don't play the game if you're not actually going to properly participate in it.
So let's turn this whole conversation, because we don't really have a script or topic to begin with. Let's turn this into the kind of players you don't want to play with.
Those are specific. There are generally two types of players I never want to run as a dungeon master. That is absolutely one of them. The ones who intentionally do not want to participate in what you have planned. And it's one thing if it's their character that kind of doesn't want to, but as long as they still get dragged along, it's okay. Because I've had players who were playing characters who did not want to be adventurers, but sort of got roped into shit whether they wanted to or not. And that's fine because the player's still having fun and they're intentionally trying to not go, but the party just keeps dragging them along anyway.
Okay.
But yeah, assholes who are like, I'm just not going, I'm going to sit in the tavern. Why the fuck are you even here? The other type of player that I never want to play with are the ones who want to intentionally fuck over the party. You only see this generally with young kids, who are sort of new to role playing. They want to play that evil hooded rogue who just steals from the party, starts picking everybody's pockets, and at that point, it's not entertaining. It's not pushing the story forward. It's just it's being problematic.
I think that's the key part of that is that when you detract from the story as planned, whether it be from refusing to go and bite on any of the leads a DM has given you, or the fact that you're not going out there and creating your own adventure for all this as well. Like if you go out of your way to just sit in the tavern, if you go out of your way to just not go anywhere or not do anything, you're hurting the group more than anybody else.
Yeah. And I mean, you're wasting everybody's time.
Yeah. So that to me is definitely one of mine, but I really haven't come across that. Usually the people that I sit with at the table want to be there and want to participate. Like even when I'm running Adventures League, if no one has shown up to the table and like not wanted to be a part of the story or do something, that the group was doing, I kind of had to railroad them real hard to get through the places I needed them to go. But overall, I've never personally run across that.
The one where they don't participate, that's pretty rare. I think in my entire time gaming, I've only ever run into one player who did that. Like you don't see it very often, but once again, they're just sort of wasting everybody's fucking time. The other one, I've seen it a lot of times where they're just pickpocketing the party and just causing havoc amongst the group. And like I said, it's almost always people who are newer to role playing and haven't quite, they're young, they're chaotic, they don't know what they want to do, but they're just there to have fun. And it's kind of like, back in the day with Diablo, where you'd have people who would just PvP you out of nowhere. and steal your stuff. And it was, you know, it was kind of just out of spite. So, yeah, those are the worst ones, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I haven't really run across many of those. Like, I say that I discourage PvP.
if there's a proper fucking reason for it, I wouldn't discourage it. I still have one player who, he's not a young person per se, but he is still reasonably new to role playing, and sort of his real life attitude is he likes a little bit of the chaotic stuff. And you know, there have been plenty of game sessions over the past few years where he'll push another character into the water or push them into a trap, stuff like that, just you know, because he, as a player, thinks it's funny. And yeah, he is finally starting to break from that. And I honestly, he's only started breaking from that with Icewind Dale. So it's pretty recent when he's quitting doing that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely with younger players, it happens, and eventually they grow out of it. But you know, there is that player out there who their enjoyment of the game is only them causing misery to other players throughout the game's tenure. And yeah. I see that more in board games than in anything else.
Oh God, yeah, I see it a lot in board games.
Yeah, where I'm just gonna be a dickbag the entire game. Like
I've totally done that myself.
Well, like if you're playing Munchkin, that's one thing. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's like don't ruin everybody's fun at the table. And
yeah, I mean, we were all still having fun the times I've done it. So it wasn't necessarily always me doing it, but it's me and the rest of my troll ass friends sort of getting into a shit war with each other during board games. So.
Yeah, and so like for me, like it's not like the party that wants to be evil or the players that want to be evil and cause chaos, because you can have fun with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like to actually put it to a point, the group that I had play through Waterdeep, they were just straight up evil. that's the time where my wife goes through and just murder hobos the entire Church of Elistray.
Yep.
we just killed them all. Yeah, how it went. Like, yeah, that's a murder hobo shitbag group.
Yes, that is definitely a murder hobo shitbag group. But it's not quite as bad if the entire party is a bunch of murder hobos. It's when you have three people in the party that are murder hobos and the fourth person is trying to be a lawful good something or other or neutral good, because then it's just conflict constantly.
Yeah.
If every one of them is evil, it actually works out all right so long as they're not trying to fuck each other over.
Yeah, and that's, you know, well, I'd say that would be my group, but the problem is Icewind Dale is built.
It is sort of built that way, yeah. It definitely can cause it.
It's built to be the thing where, like, yeah, I don't trust that person or that person or that person, and why are we all here together in this room in the middle of death?
Yep. So it's funny that we are talking about this. You know who Joe Magnazelio or whatever the hell his name is?
Yeah.
So he was answering like questions that people had thrown at him. And one of them was kind of interesting to me, and it's actually in line with what we're discussing. So what is more dangerous to a campaign? Lawful evil or chaotic evil? For like characters.
Chaotic evil because they don't know how to play chaotic evil correctly.
Yeah, see, I am actually on the lawful evil being more dangerous to a campaign.
Well, I don't think people know how to play lawful evil.
Well, yeah.
I don't think people know how to play evil correctly, but like, yeah. When my wife played her drow cleric of Loth, it was lawful evil.
Mm-hmm.
And she just followed all the teachings and regulations put down by Loth. That makes you lawful evil. Yeah. You know, it's but just
assuming that people are sort of playing it close to correct. Which one is worse?
Chaotic evil.
Yeah, see, I'm still on the lawful evil trait. So chaotic evil, I think it's highly detrimental for a short period of time. But somebody who's playing chaotic evil in a and obviously it can vary from campaign to campaign. But if it's any sort of city-based campaign with Law and Order, that character's done, and it's going to be done very quickly. Like, that character's probably going to be dead or have to flee within the first couple of game sessions. Whereas a lawful evil character, it can survive long-term and manipulate the party and manipulate the campaign if it's done right. I think it's probably more conducive. It's going to work better within the campaign setting. It's definitely not going to create the chaos that a chaotic evil character does, but it's just the length of how long you can get away with wicked evil shit.
And that's why I would say it's more difficult to have chaotic, because when I sit down and do a game session and I'm planning things out, I can plan things out. Mm-hmm. But if you're just going to be chaotic evil, the real shit bag character, and just, oh, I'm just going to go burn down this orphanage of people. Like, yep. I then have to pull out a different map, and you've delayed the story, and you've probably pissed off people in the group. Whereas a lawful evil person, you kind of know what they're going to do ahead of time, so you can have some idea of how to plan around that, you know?
Yeah, lawful evil, they're not going to try to wreck the campaign. They're not going to try to wreck the party that's with them. Yeah, they're generally, but they are going to constantly be doing evil stuff. You know, it's nothing for them to fucking, rob people quietly in back alleys. It wouldn't be anything for them to, I don't know, just, yeah.
Well, that kind of brings me up to the player that I don't like to have at my table, which is the I'm going to cause trouble, chaotic evil person.
Yeah.
Like, so, I was doing my Everyone is Naughty Christmas adventure for my group at the brick and mortar store that last year, and
of which I will be running next weekend, so I'll have plenty to talk about for the next podcast.
Yay! So I called up like all the players, like, hey, I want you all here to play. I want a lot of feedback, and I want this to go good. And one of the guys came up, and he's always had, he's a lawyer by trade, but it's just very bookwormy, you know, not in a bad way, but just you could tell socialization and being an extrovert is hard. He's, you know, a very hardcore introvert. He's a great guy, but he always plays the chaotic evil goblins and won't play anything else. All right.
Because his life is so lawful and structured, he uses D&D to get the rest of it out.
Probably. And I don't blame him for it. So I'm not going to take away his fun and let him do that. But this is just an example. He was doing the campaign and just doing everything. And by God, did he derail the campaign that I was trying to just get done. Just like, I just wanted to run my one shot.
The 5 hour long one shot.
Right. And he was just going around pitpocketing, trying to murder NPCs and stuff like that. I'm just like, come on, dude.
Which is literally the character, the player type I was just discussing that you never want to play with.
Right. So that's why I don't like the chaotic evil, like, players. I mean, that this is the reason why, and I don't want to discourage it. Like, you know, if you can be chaotic evil and play it right, and you're not causing me to pull out different battle maps or do different horrible things because you're deciding to murder the level 13 war priestess that I have in the tavern because you want her stuff, like,
yeah, that's going to end real well when you're fifth level.
Come on, dude. Just there's six other people at the table. And he always kind of had, that was always just his MMO. He just always overspoke everybody and tried to get things done. And but when he was in character and doing the stuff in character, it was great, because there's a few times where he just sold out the party to, like, an incubus, you know?
Yeah.
He was just like, yeah, I'll sell all their souls if you let me out. All right. Like, that's great. That's perfect. Do more of that. But just, you know,
Yeah, but keep don't it. Cause, yeah, roll with the campaign if you're gonna do. Yeah, just don't cause havoc that disrupts the campaign.
Right. So, that's kind of the issue that I've always had. Like I said, I've never really came across a player that didn't want to be there or didn't want to, you know, have fun or derail anything like that. But, you know, I know those people exist.
I mean, you've sort of met one. You were just talking about him. So,
but, no, I'm saying about the your other kind, where they just sit there and not.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, like those. They're once again, they're pretty rare, but I have seen it before.
So,
let's see where else I going with this?
I still have to echo how freaking fantastic my group is, though. You know, they've given me the freedom to like do the extreme it online and do all other stuff and, you know, help me work through it. And the fact that like I have really skilled rules lawyer-y kind of players, but it, in a good way, I can just go like, I don't know that spell, look it up and tell me what it is, you know? Yeah. I couldn't ask for a better group. Still need to find a fifth person, but I couldn't ask for a better group.
I mean, if the campaign's running, you've got a good group. We also had somebody message us recently asking where to find players if you're a dungeon master. I'm surprised we haven't really talked about this much. We've been playing sort of with the same people for a long enough time. But my response to it was basically like nearly every time I have found a role playing group, it's from a comic book store. Like I go to whatever the local comic book or gaming store is, and just from being around there, I meet people, and then we all just start role playing together. Sometimes we started up at the stores that I was at, and then after a while, we transitioned to running at people's houses.
Yeah.
The only other one, like I joined a group by going to a comic store. And people, some comic stores will have like a board up where people could put notes and messages and stuff. And I was just looking for groups to play in, and I was like, "Oh, well, all right, they're looking for players." So I just called them up and messaged them or whatever, and went over there and played some D&D with them. And I've done that a couple different times. I would assume most of the people that you play with, you met at a gaming store as well.
Yeah. That's pretty much the only way I've kind of met the players. Otherwise, I've been like a friend that would, come out and play with us. But I have not had any luck with finding people at a game store or even finding a group that would actually play with me. Like every time I go to the game store and like look for somebody, like, hey, we're looking for a fifth person, and I would go in and ask them, okay, cool, what kind of person are you looking for? And try to just get that information from them. Mm-hmm. It's never gone well. They've always been like, we play, 3.25 with this very added, specific skill set. And, if you don't play it this very specific way where the DM gets to basically charge you $4.95 an hour to play the game, we don't want you in the campaign. And I'm just like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that sounds a little ridiculous. Like, yeah, people, the D&D community is fairly large, but I wouldn't say it's so large that you can just straight up refuse the ability to play. Like I don't care about fourth edition, but if that was what was out at the time and that's what everyone around there was playing and I want to play, I'm going to jump in,
yeah.
I'm going to suck it up. I'm going to make the best of it and I'm going to have a good time.
I've come across that so much. So my story is when I was living in Virginia, there was a real big game store down there and they were looking for another player for their Death Watch, I think it was, 40K game.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And I was, you know, it was a role playing game, and they said they would accept any player, and it's an experience preferred. So sure. I went and I talked with them. I was like, hey, I'm sorry, I have no experience in this, but this is something that I really want to learn to play. I mean, would you have any like PDFs or a book I could borrow and learn it? And then, or do you have one I could buy in this game store? And would you let me play? And they're like, no, we only want someone that has at least 5 years experience playing this campaign setting.
A fucking job interview?
Right?
Are you fucking kidding me?
I was like, I was just dumbfounded by the fact that I had to have 5 years experience playing this specific campaign setting.
I have 30 fucking years of role-playing experience. And I would not be accepted into that group because I don't have 5 years of some shitty setting. You know?
So like
I have probably a couple decades worth of experience and knowledge in the Warhammer settings. But I don't know that specific system.
Yeah. I was very taken back by that, and
yeah, I would have been too.
I didn't go back to the store for a while because I knew that group in there was a bunch of older guys, but I think like a couple of the employees and I think the owner were a part of that game, and it really rubbed me the wrong way. Like I've never turned down someone from playing Dungeons and Dragons.
No,
that's the complete opposite of what you want. You know,
the only time I have ever turned people away from being able to play is if I already have too many people. That's it. There might be an age thing. If the kid, you know, if they're like 10 years old or something, I might not. But otherwise, I accept anyone who wants to play.
Well, like even then, like if a 10-year-old wanted to play like that night, sorry, probably won't happen. But like, I would work out some way of getting him back to have that game that he needs. You know?
Yes.
Because that's just what you do to be a decent human being.
Yeah, well, plus we want the hobby to survive. You know, it needs to thrive. The more people, especially if you introduce them younger, you know, that know how to play this thing, the more it's going to grow, the longer it's going to be around. And honestly, it's just the more people you get to play with.
Yeah, and I've made a lot of really good friends through playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really weird that, you know, people would be that exclusionary. And like, I get that it's a one-off system, but you're not going to find other people. And you just turned away someone who had interest in that system.
I mean, I've seen it a lot. I see it a lot in the Magic the Gathering community, because it is a competitive game. You get a lot of sort of douchebags who, you know, think they're better than everybody else, or they don't want this kid playing, or, oh, it's a girl, she can't play. Like, I've definitely seen that, but I can't say I've ever come across that in the role playing community. So just the fact of it, you need 5 years of playing this one system just to join our game. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, I was very dumbfounded by it. But it is what it is. You know, I didn't complain or cry about it. Just kind of like, all right, well, I'm not going to play here then.
Yeah, so. I mean, there's other people out there. Yeah, you don't have to play Death Watch or whatever Warhammer system it was at the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many systems out there, and they're all developed by good people who put a lot of time and effort into doing stuff. So it's like, don't turn away people that want to experience something new either. You know. So, yeah. Well. I did want to bring up something because we were getting close to an hour again.
We got another 20 minutes or so, but yeah, go for it.
So we, on our Facebook group, put out a survey of your favorite spells, and we asked for at least a top 3 or a top 10 ranking. Do you remember this?
I do. I don't remember what I answered, but I do remember us asking.
So I actually had time today to sit down and go through the list and parse out all the spells, and in total,
I hope you excluded Fireball from the one from my buddy Mike who answered it like 10 times.
No, I just counted it among. I just counted each time.
Okay, so fireball is the number one spell.
So there were 97 responses in total.
Okay.
Okay. Like 11 people participated. 97 responses. A lot of people didn't. There were a few people who didn't do more than five or so. So
sure. Yeah. Hey, whatever.
The number one answer, of course, was fireball.
Yeah.
It got 7 votes. So even if I excluded the other 2 from your friend Mike, yep, it still would have won with 5. But you know, everybody loves fireball. It's iconic for a reason. It's overpowered for a reason because it's so iconic, and it just makes everybody feel good when it goes into a room and kills everybody.
It is making it sort of difficult for me in Icewind Dale because my players just hit 5th level. So anytime there's large groups of stuff, they just sort of fucking raffle stomp it and move on. But,
so fireball, right?
Yeah, because I have 2 players in the party who can drop fireball.
Ooh.
Yep. Yeah. One of them's a light. They have a light cleric and a wizard. So
that reminds me of the response I got from my Dread of the Ice Devil module. This module was great, but you know, I had a group with 2 mages, but they had each had fireball, and all the encounters were super easy because of it.
Yep.
Well, anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We can't fucking balance for a broke ass spell that's been in the game since first edition.
So honestly, what was interesting about that is when I wrote everybody's been naughty. And I put in the section that says, like, you know, if you want to make the encounter stronger or harder, I put in, like, if you want to make it harder, put in the anti-spell system and have it go off whenever someone casts an AoE spell.
Yeah.
You know, yep. There's your solution to the fireball from the 4 party members.
There's always ways of shutting down fireball, but you can't expect it to be written into every campaign or module.
Right.
But anyway, so back on to the spell list of what we had.
So number 2 and number 3 were tied at 3 votes apiece. Can you take a guess as to what they are?
Time Stop?
No.
Black Blade of Disaster?
No.
Oh, I don't know then. Those are the best 2 spells.
Time Stop wasn't even on the list.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It's kind of crap in 5th edition. What was the 8th level one that we joked about? Typhoon? Tsunami?
Tsunami came in tied with 2 votes.
Okay. So what was the other one?
Eldritch Blast and Healing Word.
Oh, okay, well, Healing Word I can't argue with. Eldritch Blast is not... It's not... you know, it's a decent... it's a pretty fucking good cantrip, honestly. But it's only amazing because of the warlock. You know, if a sorcerer has it and they don't have the other stuff to boost it, then it's just it's a cantrip. It's fucking, it's a firebolt. Whereas like with the warlocks, they get other stuff. They get to add their charisma bonus to the damage of it. They can push and pull things with it.
It's just a heavy crossbow.
Yeah.
That hits multiple targets.
Yeah. For a spellcaster.
Yeah. But it is a very iconic spell. Everybody loves it. Everyone thinks it's the best cantrip ever. So no. I can see it being on the list.
Prestidigitation is the best cantrip ever.
Well, speaking of prestidigitation, the following spells got 2 votes each: Find the Path, Hero's Feast, Mage Hand, Misty Step, Prestidigitation, Psychic Scream, Revivify, Shape Change, Shield, and Tsunami.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good list of spells. I like most of those.
Yeah. Those are like the 13, and then all the rest, the other 84, were all single
vote. Wow.
Yeah, single vote.
I'm a little surprised by that. We weren't getting duplicates.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed one. Dimension Door was also got 2.
Oh, yeah. Big fan of Dimension Door.
But yeah, I mean, there's a couple things in here. Black Blade of Disaster, Chromatic Orb, Contact Other Planes, Detect Magic.
I have to say how much fun Contact Other Planes is. So the campaign I used to run, my buddy Mike, same guy that we're talking about, plays a gnome wizard who was a diviner, divination specialist, and he would cast that spell all the time, and then he would continuously fail his roll and go insane for 24 hours. Like, every time he would try it, he would just fail that fucking roll, and then we had this psychotic gnome running around and babbling for, you know, a whole day.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you gotta go insane somehow.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, that's a good list of spells. Oh,
what else was on here?
Oh, yeah, okay, go for it.
Invisibility, greater invisibility, reverse gravity.
I do love reverse gravity. I've played with that a lot.
Meteor swarm, mirror image, spiritual weapon, simulacrum, shillelagh.
Shillelagh! We used to have a druid that every time he would cast shillelagh, he would yell it like that. Then he would hit things with it.
Yeah, but I think we should do another one of these. And just do it with favorite class and just kind of boil it down to that.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot of these that we can do. Favorite class, favorite magic item, favorite race.
I swear, though,
there's a lot of them.
If Artificer wins, though,
there's no way. We could even do favorite archetype or a subclass. What do they call them? Is it archetypes or subclasses?
Subclasses in 5e.
Because it was archetype for a long time in 5e, if I recall right.
I think there's referred to. I think that both are referred to sometimes, but I think they're more known by subclasses now.
It took me a couple of years of playing 5th edition to stop calling them prestige classes.
You're just doing it wrong, man.
Yeah, I do it all wrong. I am a game master, after all. So the question I had for you, what is your favorite magic item?
What?
And it's a personal choice. What is your own favorite magic item from D&D, if you have one?
Dead silence for 10 seconds.
As you think. What's the first one that comes to mind? How about that?
+3 weapon.
Okay, well, I mean, to be fair, you play fighters.
Yeah.
You play fighters, so a +3 weapon would probably be your favorite magic item. I have actually found my own favorite magic item, and it was because of the discussion we had on the last podcast. So, last podcast, we were talking about no magic weapons in Icewind Dale.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can buy the the sword of the moon-touched sword, I think.
Yeah,
moon-touched swords. So naturally my players heard the podcast and immediately they went and bought those so they can get around damage resistance. But because of that, I started looking through every one of the little common magic items in Xanathar, and I came across the Staff of Bird Calls.
Okay.
And it is as fucking awful as it sounds. Oh, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, my screen. I didn't touch my screen, so it went blank on me. Been here for almost an hour. So the Staff of Bird Calls, it's your standard staff. It's got 10 charges. You can expend one charge from the staff and cause it to create one of the following sounds out to a range of 60 feet. A finch's chirp, a raven's caw, a duck's quack, a chicken's cluck, a loon's call, a turkey's gobble, a seagull's cry, an owl's hoot, an eagle's shriek, or the one thing that it would actually be used for, a goose's honk.
Honk.
Yeah. Yeah, so 10 times a day, if you want, this thing can just honk like a fucking goose as an action. And the best part of the thing is if you burn up all the charges, you have to roll a d20. If you roll roll a 1 on it, the staff explodes in a harmless cloud of bird feathers. from now on, every spellcasting character I have is going to have one of these. I'm just going to walk around into fucking taverns and honk it and just wait for it to blow up just in this poof of bird feathers everywhere. they're so cheap to buy. Why not? You know, it's 100 gold, whatever.
On that list of Xanathar's common magic items, I will say my favorite one on that list is the magic key that has the 5% chance of opening any lock.
Yep. Yeah, I actually talked to my players about that. They could just buy like 20 of these things. Yeah, just keep trying every one of them until you get it.
Right. I think that's that one to me is the best one. Just sit there and just like eventually it'll open up, because you know you're going to keep using that key. And eventually you're going to run into that one time that you use it and it just breaks the campaign setting because you didn't have the right key, but the door got opened anyway. So you get the chest full of treasures and the DM's crying into their hands because everything is ruined now. It's all your fault.
Yep. It's my campaign is ruined. How was I to expect them to go out and drop 2,000 gold on a bunch of mystery keys?
Yeah.
Just walking around with a key ring of the same damn key that'll unlock something at random.
Like, this is going to work one day.
Sooner or later. I don't need a knock spell. I don't need a wizard. I've got mystery keys. Yeah, there's a lot of fun little stuff in the common magic items from Xanathar's. I think at some point that's what I need to do, is write up like 50 common magic items. I've been working on the whole wizard... or the arcane caster magic items. I need to get that finished up and get it published at some point.
Yeah, I gotta get the next thing. I actually started working on the next thing now.
We aren't going to talk about it yet, I'm sure, because I think you can we drop any spoilers at all? I don't know if we have or haven't on the podcast at this point. So
no, it's still in.
Pre-alpha.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to take a while to write this one up.
Yeah. But overall, I'm still stuck on Xanathar's list of things.
You just flipped through them. So many good ones.
But yeah, I mean, I think this isn't our last podcast for the year, is it?
No, I think we have one more. Yeah, we have one more.
Then I'll save that thought and topic for next time.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll make sure this week to get the thing posted. What's your favorite class to play? And we'll try to post up a few of these, get people's responses. They're always I always have a good time looking at them and then talking about them on the podcast. So.
Well, we'll put it up Wednesday. Christmas Eve, so people who can probably see it, because no one's going to be on Facebook at all on Christmas, because everyone's going to spend quality time with their families, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah. And hopefully they're not going to be running around spreading the virus everywhere. Stay home, people. Immediate family only. But anyway, I want this lockdown to be over, man. I've been stuck here since March. I'm ready to go see people.
You can't go anywhere. You stay in Alabama.
Aw. All right, guys. That's it for the podcast. Hope everybody enjoyed, and see you next week.
Craig, if you screwed up, I'm going to beat you up.
Bye, Craig.
I'm going to call your brothers.
Get him, Trevor. Get him.